Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our service. Thank you so much for being here. We really do appreciate your attendance this morning. I wanted to talk about Abraham and Lot. In Genesis chapter 13, there is a lot going on between these two relatives, and it comes to an interesting moment in verse number 8, Genesis 13, verse 8, where Abraham says to Lot, we're brethren, we're brothers here. Abraham and Lot were not siblings, but they were relatives. And Abraham values that relationship. And he expresses to Lot here that we should be doing things differently. We should be doing things better because of this special relationship that we have. Some of the backstory is in Genesis chapter 13, verse 1, Abraham goes from Egypt, and he has his family there, and Lot is with him. Lot, in Genesis chapter 13, kind of sticks out like a sore thumb because it's in Genesis chapter 12 where God expresses to Abraham that he needs to go to a new land and leave his father's house and his father's people, and that there seems a small reluctance on Abraham's part to cut all ties. Lot was with him, and if we understand correctly the instructions in Genesis chapter 12 given to Abraham by God, Lot should not have been with him, and we see difficulties. You know, it's incredible how many times you can follow the instructions that God gives, and when they're disobeyed, you see that frequently results in some conflict, right? And there is a not too subtle lesson packed in that observation, that if we want to live a conflict-free or a conflict-reduced life, how about try living the way God tells us to live? That will go a long, long, long way in resolving. Lot is here with Abraham, and we see the problem that comes as a result. The land is not able to support them, verse number 5 says. There was too much of a drain. This is, I suppose, a good problem to have. Abraham and Lot were doing so well in their respective estates that they were a drain on the resources of the land. And so it's observed that we can't keep on doing this. You know, this is not sustainable. And so Abraham says, listen, Let's not have any problems. Let's not have any conflict or strife arise. We're brothers. We see a brother's love here in Genesis chapter 13, verse 8. And it's a bit ironic, I'll grant you, because we see one brother's love, not necessarily mutual love between these two relatives. Abraham is very magnanimous. Abraham says to Lot, his relative whom he loves, listen, you pick. If you go that away, I'll go this way. If you go this way, I'll go that away. And that is a big gesture. We have this middle seat in our minivan, and it must be awesome to sit in that middle seat. I don't know. I've never sat in the middle seat because I'm up front driving. But I suspect it must be incredible to sit in that middle seat because my two girls fight over who's going to sit in that middle seat. And we have to, you know, we have to break out the schedule, and we have to say, okay, you can sit in the middle seat on the way there, and you can sit on the middle seat on the way coming back. Right? And then, you know, it turns into one of these things. Well, she sat in the middle seat last time. And then, well, last time didn't count because that was just a quick trip to McDonald's. But you know, the whole schedule thing and the whole discussion about this precious middle seat comes up frequently, right? I don't know if y'all have such a special middle seat, but it seems to be really, really desirable. Well, I would like for all of the siblings in the room to see what Abraham does. Abraham says, "Hey, Lot, if you go this way, I'll go that way. If you go that way, I'll go this way. You pick first, right? You pick first." And this shows Abraham's great love for his relative. Now, it's a bit one-sided. Love, this kind of love especially, frequently gets taken advantage of. So note that. And you see right here in Genesis chapter 13 how Lot takes advantage of Abraham's love. Lot lifts up his eyes, verse number 10, and he sees that the plains of Jordan were well watered everywhere. And then parenthetically we're told this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Interesting here, this is written, this account in Genesis chapter 14 is written after the fact, but it presents at a time before the fact, thus we have that parenthetical inclusion. At the time that Lot sees Sodom and Gomorrah, it doesn't look the way it looks today. It was lush, it was beautiful, it was well watered, like the garden of the Lord. And Lot decides, hey, Abraham offered, you know, you shouldn't offer for me to pick first if you're going to be upset about how I pick. So Lot decides that he's going to pitch his tent in Sodom and Gomorrah, which will prove a very, very bad decision. And we're told here in Genesis 13, verse 13, that the people of Sodom and Gomorrah were extremely wicked. We'll have more to say about that in chapter 18. Looks can be deceiving, right? What looks innocent, what looks harmless, what you tell yourself is innocent and harmless might be something altogether different. So investigate, right? Investigate, and as you do your investigation, it might be wise to get other people's input besides your family members, right? Besides somebody who has some sort of bias or partiality built in. If I want to know what's going on with something that my children are doing, I'll of course ask my children. We discuss these sort of things quite often. But I'm not going to let my children be the only source of information I get on activities that they participate in. It's only wise to kind of do some deeper investigating. And here, Sodom and Gomorrah appeared really sweet, really harmless, really innocent from the outside. And ironically, Sodom and Gomorrah were wicked cities that displeased the Lord. So the separation is made. Abraham goes his way, Lot goes his way. They part ways, but this love doesn't stop. We mentioned Genesis chapter 18 a moment ago. In Genesis chapter 18, we're told that the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah have reached their limit, and now God is going to destroy these cities. And who is it who comes to his brother's aid yet again? It's Abraham coming to help out Lot. And Abraham hears of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and I wonder how quickly it was before Abraham connected the dots. Wait a minute. That's where Lot and his family live. So Abraham shows a brother's love again and goes to the Lord and does so quite humbly, we do well to point out. Genesis chapter 18, verse 27, he calls himself dust of the earth. And he speaks to the Lord. And he asks the Lord, if there are 50 righteous souls in Sodom and Gomorrah, will you spare the cities? God says, yes. Abraham says, five? That's not that big of a number, is it? You know, five? So what about five fewer than 50? Will you spare the city for those sakes? God says yes. Abraham continues and he persists. Do you wonder why? Do you wonder why Abraham cares? Abraham is a caring person, number one, but Abraham has a very vested interest here. And Abraham comes to the magic number of 10, and Abraham asks the Lord, if there are 10 righteous souls there, will you spare these cities? And God agrees that he will. And Abraham must feel like he has successfully interceded for his family. When we look at the New Testament and what it tells us about prayer, it describes Christ as our intercessor, our intermediary. And sometimes those words get a little lost, I suppose, in function. So I look at Genesis chapter 18 and particularly Abraham's work here at the last part of Genesis chapter 18, the closing verses of the chapter, as a very prime example of what intercession is. Abraham is interceding for his relative Lot. And that's what Jesus is doing for us as our intercessor, as the bridge between God and man. And that number 10 is probably not accidental. You will note, as you see Abraham continuing this negotiation with God, that he picks up the pace. And instead of multiples of 5, he goes multiples of 10. And he finally gets to this number 10 and asks the Lord, will you spare Sodom and Gomorrah for the sake of 10 righteous souls? 10 is an interesting number. In Sodom and Gomorrah, there lived Lot and his wife. Lot had unmarried daughters, plural, at least 2. Could have been more than 2, but at least 2. And Lot had sons-in-laws, at least 2. Again, could have been more, but at least 2. Those sons-in-laws were told in Genesis chapter 19, verse 14. He had 4 of these, and they were married as well. That brings us to number 10. Abraham sees a strategy here in his talks with God. Abraham might really be thinking, okay, if Lot and his family are good, then this whole thing, this whole crisis can be averted. Abraham believes that Lot and his family will be able to save the day. And he comes to their rescue, and he places a lot of confidence in them. Unfortunately, Abraham is unaware of the fact that Lot's family had departed from the Lord. And so, unfortunately, again, Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. But not for lack of trying, not for lack of a brother's love that would not let it happen without trying to avert it. We also see in Abraham and Lot's life, a brother's life in general. We know that these people were not perfect. We see, in fact, in Genesis chapter 13, maybe a reluctance, a hesitancy in Abraham's faith as God tells him to go away from his family to a new and different place. Abraham might appear. You do your own digging into this and answer the question for yourself as to why Abraham brings Lot with him. It might be reflective of a little doubt, of a little discomfort with God's command. Lot, we know he wasn't a perfect person. He had his fair share of problems in his family and as a provider and presider over his family. Lot doesn't do everything that we would like to see him do. There's a tinge of jealousy, perhaps. There's a tinge of selfishness, perhaps, as Lot picks the best of the land for himself. Abraham and Lot were human beings. As such, they were flawed people. But they loved each other. And they were connected to each other. And they teach us a valuable lesson about persevering even when things are crazy all around us. The church is not an office. You know that. But office dynamics get studied far more regularly than church dynamics do. And so we can borrow, I think, a few lessons that are learned from a study of people in general. You know, every study of people yields some similar results. We're not perfect. We have our flaws. But there are some things that are bigger than our flaws. You know, there are some relationships that persevere and endure despite of somebody's flaws. As office settings are studied, there are some similar themes that get found out. The top qualities that are disliked among people, guess what they are? Somebody who is a constant complainer. We all know somebody like this, I suppose, who is just a constant critic, a gossip. Business studies have found that those who gossip, that's a quality that is almost unforgivable in office settings. Somebody who's two-faced, right? Somebody who says one thing when you can hear them, and something else when you cannot hear them. Well, that's a fatal characteristic in a lot of these studies. We all, if we're not careful, will feel the pull to be these ways. And we need to realize that even though we're not perfect, we must be faithful. We have to be faithful to the Lord. Abraham doesn't run and gossip about Lot. Can you believe that Lot picked the best land? Abraham does not belittle Lot or put him down. There's the temptation to do those sorts of things, I suppose. Abraham does not go and complain to a third party about the audacity of his brother to do these things. Abraham isn't happy when he hears that Lot's home is going to be destroyed. You know, some people are vindictive and mean like that. And even preachers, you know, I have admonished, politely so, a few preachers in my time who, after they leave a congregation, kind of quietly, they wouldn't ever be public about this, but they kind of quietly hope that the congregation will just kind of fall to pieces, you know. I'm leaving this congregation, and I hope, quietly, secretly, inwardly, I hope that they have problems after I leave. It'll show how important I was, or it'll show how much I did, or it'll kind of stroke my ego in some sort of weird way. No, 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 no. Listen, we want to support one another and to help one another. This whole thing got started by Abraham saying, let's find a way not to fight here. Let's find a way not to fight. Listen, if you want to fight, you'll find a way to fight. But Abraham says, I don't want to fight. Let's find a way to get along. Getting along is easier than fighting. So let's get along. Let's find a way to make this work. We're brothers here. We're connected. And even though not all of us in this room are related, several of y'all are, but not all of us in this room are related physically, we're connected like Abraham and Lot were. We call one another in the church today brother or sister. We don't do that as a title. We don't do that with partiality. We do that to show, to reflect, to communicate our familial bond in the Lord. And Abraham says to his relative Lot, we need to figure out a way to make this thing work. We need to figure out a way to get along. And I will be happy to give you what you want to make you happy. Imagine if everybody did that, right? Imagine if Abraham says to Lot, you pick. And then Lot says to Abraham, no, you pick. Well, it would be a little funny at first, right? You pick, no, you pick, no, you pick. Kind of sounds like where we're going to eat lunch today. But if we really, really tapped in to what was important to the other person, a lot of our problems would disappear. A lot of them would go away. In the church, we have those same kind of personalities that we described in those office settings, the gossip, the person who's two-faced, the constant complainer. We know people who just kind of idle rough. They idle high like an old out-of-tune car, you know? And we know that years are being taken off of that person's life because of that. And if I want to get all worked up about something, man, I know a dozen or more people I can contact who would be happy to get me all worked about what they're all worked up about. These people just kind of stay churning like that. We don't want to be like that. Abraham and Lot found a way to set aside their differences and to get along. These differences were not doctrinal, clearly. These were personality differences. Those are the only kind of differences we can set aside, you know. We can't set aside personal differences. We can't set aside doctrinal differences. We need to set aside personal differences. Abraham and Lot, we're not talking about instrumental music or baptizing babies. They were talking about things where one opinion was literally just as good as another. And in this case, Abraham tried to find a way to be a peacemaker. I've had some opportunity to reflect on my ministry, on our congregation here. And we are a very special congregation. I was talking to a former member of the Augusta Road Church the other day who to this day says that is a special church. And I agreed with her. It's a special, very, very special congregation. If somebody wanted to complain about something, I'm sure there would be plenty of things to complain about. If you wanted to, right? If you really wanted to complain about something, you could start with the preacher. He's not a perfect guy. I express regularly the fact that I'm not a perfect preacher. And as I've gotten a little bit more comfortable or confident in my ministry, I've added this to that. I've said, you know what? I'm not a perfect preacher. And by the way, if I were a perfect preacher, I would be out of place at a congregation like this because we're not a perfect church. You know, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a perfect church or a perfect preacher. So we're not fooling ourselves into thinking that we're perfect. But we are being faithful. I've thought about the elders past 12 months. I've thought about the preachers past 12 months. I don't like talking about myself. It's kind of weird. And it's extra weird to talk about myself in the third person, but I've thought about us, and there's a lot that has happened. I mean, grandbaby, baby, career upheaval, work stress, people passing away, more responsibility coming onto your plate because a key member of the family has passed away, and now the care and providership of a loved one is on you now more primarily. People moving. There's a lot that goes on. And I'm so proud that our elders have made a way to be faithful through all that. I'm happy that the preacher has made a way to be faithful through all that. It would be really easy to say, you know what, it's just too hard. Too rough, you know, too difficult. And then when you go down that road, then you kind of pick up momentum, you know. When you let yourself go there, you let yourself stay there, and it gets real ugly real fast. And I'm afraid that's one of the things that happened to Peter in Matthew chapter 26. He let himself go down a road, and he stayed there, and he got comfortable there, and it got real ugly real fast. And so it could be real easy just to kind of go into complainer mode. You know, my favorite person's not teaching Bible class this quarter. Well, we could focus on that, I suppose. Or we could say, man, I'm so proud of these people who have so much going on in their life, and yet they're making a way. I almost said finding a way, but that doesn't give full credit. They're making a way to be faithful. Faithfulness is kind of the pulse, right? It needs to be steady. It has to be steady. There could be sickness in other parts. There could be problems elsewhere in the body, but that pulse needs to be steady. That pulse is our faithfulness. It needs to be steady. There can be problems with, I don't know, Bible class material. There could be problems with somebody forgetting to lock a door. There could be problems with the lights were turned off when they should have been turned on. Or somebody forgot to get something that he was supposed to get. There could be these things, of course. But faithfulness needs to be steady. And in Abraham's life, we see faithfulness. Faithfulness to God, faithfulness to his fellow man. We see that love. That love is there in spite of imperfections. Lot wasn't perfect. Neither was Abraham. If one was perfect, it would have been awkward on the other, because the other would not have been able to match that perfection. These were not perfect people. But we see love. We see raw reality. We see their life splayed before us. Good, bad, and ugly. And we see this special relationship that is so much like another relationship that the New Testament touches on, and that is Christ's relationship with us. Christ, like Abraham was to Lot, Christ is to us. And he gives us the very best. And he wants us to be there to love him, to appreciate him, to respect him, to find a way to make it work. Jesus loves us so much that he gave his life for us. And this morning, if you are not loving Jesus back, you can do that by obeying that plan of salvation. Hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized, that's the way to say I love you to our Lord. Jesus says in John 14:15, very famously, if you love me, keep my commandments. Those are the commandments that Jesus has given for persons to be saved, hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. If you're ready for that today, we are more than ready for you today. As somebody who maybe he has already obeyed that plan of salvation, that's fantastic. Remember, we need to keep on going. Right? We need to keep on going. That pulse needs to be steady. And we need to make sure that we make a way to be faithful, not unfaithful. We need to make sure that we find a way to do it, not to excuse it. We need to make sure that we put the Lord first because He has never stopped putting us first. This morning, if you need to respond to this invitation, we lovingly encourage you to think about that and respond if you have a need while we stand and sing. Won't you come, please?
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.